You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Wonderful, majestic world around us. It's time for Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
Kia ora, Dr. Joel Rindlauf. We are joined live in studio for your very cool Dear Science debut. Just to kind of kick things off, I'd love to hear a little bit about you.
Well, thank you for bringing me in, kia ora. As you may know, I am a scientist.
I'd hope so.
Amongst other things.
Amongst other things. Really into chemistry. I'm in the chemistry department at the University of Auckland. And I really like little tiny aerosol particles, like the stuff that's so small you can't even see, but is a big measure of air quality.
Okay, well, it's a very niche interest, I'm assuming.
Extremely niche.
Is this what you
niche.
Did your PhD in?
I did.
Wow.
I did.
A lot of time kind of staring at air and hoping to see something out of that.
Exactly.
If you could summarize what your PhD research was in one sentence in layman's terms, what would that be?
I looked at tree farts.
Okay, well, we got our first laugh for today. That's good. That's a good way to start.
Well, this is, Dear Science, because Marcus Jones has unfortunately moved on, and it sounds like he's dead. He's not. He's just gone. He's gone to do greater and bigger things, I'm sure. But we're really excited to have some fresh voices in the studio. And if you guys have seen a picture of Joel, he has a magnificent moustache as well. So that is quite...
And mullet.
And a mullet.
Do you call it a mullet?
Oh, yeah. It definitely helps being a scientist, I'll tell you that.
You know that there is a competition annually for best mullet in New Zealand. You could be
in
a
New
contender.
Zealand.
Yeah, you could be a top contender.
Sign me up.
I'll find the link.
Yeah, how about I just finding out about this now?
Well, so, next year you can join the race.
Yeah, well, that wraps up Dear Science. We've got our mullet competition and that's it. No. So our first topic for today, pollution, and that can have an impact on a baby's gut. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so I wanted to talk a little bit about air pollution because that's kind of what I nerd out about the most. And so I'll give you a little bit of a background here. Air pollution, not good for you at all, especially for developing people. Mm. So there was this really cool study back in 2017 where they actually looked at the air pollution from biomass burning. So this is like forest fires in California. And it was next to the zoo. So they actually were able to measure the impact on baby monkeys at that time, because you can't really just expose somebody or an animal to air pollution. That's not ethical. Mm-hmm. But it was just happened to be a natural study where they found that the baby monkeys that were exposed to air pollution when they were just being born actually later in life had much worse respiratory effects and immune function as well.
Yeah, well, it seems like, you know, air pollution, it seems a very clear correlation. So has it taken this long for an actual kind of study to be done in this field?
So we're constantly learning more and more about the risks associated with air pollution. Hmm. And so this study that was just recently published in the journal Gut Microbes is looking at, well, we know that air pollution can affect lungs, it can affect your heart, it can even affect cognitive development. But in this paper, they're saying there could be a correlation with the microbes that are in your intestinal tract.
Mm.
And so what they saw in this paper is that people that were more exposed to air pollution, so this is, when I say air pollution, I'm talking things like particulate matter. So these are the little tiny particles in air that you can't see, but are, when you breathe them in, can actually harm you. And what they found is that they had a lower amount of good bacteria in these fecal samples, and they had a higher amount of bad bacteria, which meant that there was more inflammation. And so the more we learn about the air pollution, the worse it kind of gets. And that's what I study, very depressing topics.
So to clarify, you said this particular study was on monkeys.
Okay, yeah.
So
clarify. The old study that I mentioned, 2017, that was on monkeys. That was where you could actually expose someone or a monkey to air pollution and see the effects years later in life. Like years later, they still were worse with respiratory problems than other monkeys that weren't exposed to air pollution. Mm. So the new study was, it was a bit of a small study. It was like 130 different babies in this cohort where they actually followed up with air pollution and then were able to take fecal samples and look at the microbes in them to see which ones were good, which ones were bad.
Because again, ethically, there's probably a raft of concerns concerning, you know, having babies exposed to your car exhausts.
Can't just put a baby up to a tailpipe and see what happens.
So where were these babies from? Was this a global?
No, it was, like I said, a small study of a... It was kind of something they were already doing, and then they kind of had this data and said, all right, well, let's also check for these gut microbes. So this isn't the first study that has sensed a correlation between air pollution inhalation and microbial activity in your gut, but it's just another piece of the puzzle that helps us say, well, I mean, this could be an issue with gut microbes that could affect things like obesity, Crohn's disease, or even diabetes later in life.
Just adding to the long list of ramifications. So I guess silver lining here, you'll never run out of things to research if you're into your air pollution.
That's sadly how it goes.
Ever developing, ever evolving line of work, I guess. And you're just constantly adapting to these new updates and new things.
It is exciting to discover something new, but also extremely terrifying when you realize that it's trying to kill me. Every time.
Anything on the happy note?
Yeah, well, let's move on to our second topic because I think we're all getting a bit bummed out in the studio here.
Diamond Rain.
Yeah, Diamond Rain. So that is a very cool, like, flashy sounding thing. Is it as exciting as it sounds?
I'm going to say yes.
Okay.
Science is that exciting. And so we have another atmosphere here. Now we're not talking about air on the Earth, for instance. We're talking about rain, diamonds, planets like Neptune, Uranus.
Wow.
And what we're now beginning to hypothesize is that this diamond rain is probably more common than we think on these planets.
Diamond rain, so literally
diamonds.
Rain that is diamonds.
Yes.
Can you expand a little? I'm having some beautiful imagery come into my mind, but what is it?
So what happens is on these gas giants or these gas planets, these ice planets as they're sometimes referred to, is that you're going to have a lot of carbon in their atmosphere and it's under extremely high pressure, extremely high temperatures, like thousands of degrees. And then maybe 200,000 times the pressure that we feel here on the surface of the Earth. So extremely high pressure. So what that can actually do is just break apart the methane that's in the atmosphere to create just carbon. So what diamond is just a bunch of carbons connected to each other. And so under extremely high pressures and temperatures like this, we're actually forming diamond crystals. And then as they coalesce, so to speak, that they're going to then become heavier and then actually fall down the atmosphere of these planets, just like rain would.
And how would you even go about hypothesizing this? It's a very far out concept to be thinking about.
It is difficult, especially since we haven't really sent a lot of probes that far to these two different planets because they're just so far away, so far away. So we don't have a whole lot of data on this diamond rain effect itself, but we do know the composition of the atmosphere. We can model exactly the temperatures and pressures involved. So what this study did was they shot a laser at a water bottle.
This sounds great. Yeah. I'm loving it already.
Right. Is that not the same thing as Neptune?
Your eyes are like bulging as you said that.
That is obviously very similar conditions.
Right.
A laser and a water bottle, plastic kiwi blue bottle, and the conditions on a planet ages away.
So what they did is this wasn't just any ordinary laser. This was the most high-powered laser in the world, basically. It was an X-ray laser that you basically need a particle accelerator just to create it.
Wow.
And so they put this piece of plastic in it, the same stuff that's made out of water bottles, and it was basically just destroys it with this big sonic boom, and then just see what happened is that under these extremely high temperatures and pressures that were created by this laser, formed little tiny diamonds, nano diamonds, that were created just by shooting a plastic with laser because that plastic contains a lot of carbon in it. And they're able to break down those bonds and form these diamonds at a higher rate than they thought they were going to.
Far out.
How did the temperatures on the surface of these, or not surface, the atmosphere surrounding these ice planets get so high? Because they are further away from the sun, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, yeah. They are very far, but they're huge. So they have a lot of gravity, a lot of gravity. And that's where this is all happening.
Mm. And that's why it pulls it in.
Yes.
Pulls in our little diamond rain, which is very cool and I guess very unlikely to happen here unless you have an X-ray laser lying around your house somewhere, which unfortunately BFM listeners might not relate to.
No, we'll have to put in a grant application for the next funding round to see if we can get one here in studio.
New Zealand On Air, please give us a bit of a boost for our X-ray laser. Moving on to our final topic for Dear Science today, male dolphins, right? So they apparently can form rival teams, and I mean, they're a very social animal anyway, but this is kind of surprising to me. Tell us about that.
This is the first time where we've actually observed species other than humans that are able to form these type of intricate social networks. Like even chimpanzees, who are a very social animal and a primate, don't form this type of social bonding. So it's really interesting to see, and this was published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, also known as PNAS, or colloquially PNAS.
Of course.
Yes.
Wonderful.
So this is actually a top journal, and they followed these group of dolphins off the coast of Western Australia. And so just a little background on dolphins, they are a very social animal, and they're also, by our terms, very promiscuous. Like, they don't mate with just one person for the rest of their lives. It's basically a series of flings constantly.
And am I right in thinking they're the only animal that enjoy mating?
They do mate, not to procreate. So they mate for pleasure.
I see.
And they will also mate not only with females, but males as well.
That's so, right, because you can have gay dolphins.
Gay dolphins are a real thing.
But so they've formed these intricate social networks. How do you go about observing that? Do you just like kind of sit in the water and watch them all, you know, have their big dolphin orgy?
A lot of observation over years. Years of this study, just to understand exactly how these social interactions work. And so here's what it is. They were basically following the mating, because that's the big deal here. Dolphin orgies.
Sorry, God.
Are very much.
I'm finding it very hard to be mature right now.
You said that on you.
Anyway, yeah, continue, but, please continue.
Sorry. Oh yeah, we got to know about these dolphin orgies.
Yeah. So they've watched them.
So they're taking notes here. This is
scientific. Not, yeah. It is for research purposes.
Research purposes.
Of course. Yeah.
Yes. Clearly. So these flings work, they're called consortships. So you'll have two or three male dolphins that will escort a female, and they'll hang out for a while on the order of hours if it's not going well, to weeks if you really found a good fling.
Wow.
Oh my gosh. So you've got a kind of a wingman situation going on.
Yeah, so it'll be like three males, so it'll be like three wingmen and then one female.
Wow. And one of them, are they sort of battling for who's going to be the potential?
Well, so if you're in a tight group of two or three, like you guys are tight. You're gonna be getting freaky with each other. Like, this is not a big deal.
Yeah.
But where the issue is when other dolphins want to come in and join the party. And that's where there's a benefit of having these extensive social networks.
Mm.
So think of it like you and your two mates, you've got your own little thing going on, but you're also part of like a team, okay?
Okay.
So you have a team. So, and then there's going to be other teams that you would, you know, battle against, or you can be friends with. So this is the levels they talked about in the paper. We have the first level, which is you and your tight mates getting freaky with dolphins. Your second level is like your team, your crew, which is maybe like up to 14 different dolphins, like if you got a pretty big gang, if you're super social. And then there's just patches of these different teams. So like think of it in like sports, like every team, every city has a team. And if you have a lot of friends with other teams, then you are going to have more success mating.
So it's kind of like a tiered social structure where if you have great connections and you've got like lots of pods that you have social interactions with, you're better off in the long run.
Yes,
if you're than a dolphin who's isolated.
And the thing that makes it different is that in other species, like people do form teams, but they're all very hostile to each other, and it's usually based on, you know, your relatives. Mm. Whereas with dolphins, it's not based on relatives, and all these other teams can be friendly with each other. So if you and another gang are on good terms, you have a better chance of success mating. So the difference is how these teams are actually can team up, or your relationship, your social interactions with this third tier. Mm. And so if you have a lot of different teams that you're cool with, things are sweet. If you make a lot of enemies, then you're not going to have success.
Wow. So this is kind of the most social animal that we've seen observed in the wild so far, right? Even compared to chimpanzees, aside from humans, obviously.
And I'd add to that fluid. It sounds like they're incredibly fluid. They're just between social groups, as you say, they're really amicable and...
Yes. So even if you aren't necessarily good friends with the team, they will still see some dolphins that will socialize and interact. But when it comes to this specific act of like trying to find a mate, if your team isn't friends with their team, then that's trouble. Even though it's only going to be, you know, one or two dolphins getting the job done when it comes down to it.
Well, that is fascinating, and I've never heard anything like it. That's incredible. Yeah. And I guess
really took me on a journey.
This sets the tone for the rest of Dear Science with Joel, so stay tuned for coming
more
weeks.
Freaky stuff coming.
Yeah.
more freaky science.
Well, that's what we're hoping for, and we hope you all learned something, and make sure you stay tuned for more of that.
Well, I didn't know that before. Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.